Expert advice and data-driven insights that unlock your business's potential. Absa Insights, brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking.
It is interesting times indeed. So other than saying to you that right now the world is looking a little bit upside down for most of the consumers, what we're trying to do is look at data on a day-to-day basis and try and understand what's really happening out there. People have obviously been in lockdown. They've been constrained from spending behaviors, so they couldn't spend on what they normally spend on. Yet the data is telling us from a card acquiring perspective, people are still spending. They're just spending differently.
Anthony, to you this afternoon, Isana talks about the fact that we all stayed away from the shops and part of it was enforced. One gets a sense that people are being trickled back in again, albeit quite slowly once you get through all of the hand-wringing and face covers and everything else.
Absolutely, Bruce. And I think what's fascinating is also how it's affecting different regions of the country, different types of shopping malls very differently. If you look at your major super regional malls across the country, particularly those that might have had an exposure to tourism, the V&A in Cape Town, Sandton City, etc., footfall is still well down, obviously a lot better than during the full lockdown, but well down on normal levels. And you'd actually be forgiven if you went to some of the more convenience rural shopping malls. You'd almost think there was no coronavirus that had never hit. You know, in some cases, some of those malls' footfall's actually up on pre-coronavirus levels.
Pogiwakunena, how's this translating then to the bottom line? We look at retail results across the board, and there's a huge amount of pressure, not only here, but in economies across the globe. And you've had that experience as well.
Oh, yeah. No, thanks, Bruce. It's been quite tough. You know, we lost obviously a whole month of sales in April, and not only in South Africa for TFG, but also Australia and the UK, who obviously were also in lockdown. So bottom line under pressure, margins under pressure. But, you know, South Africa is a very resilient economy, and we've seen some uptick in the past few months, but certainly April was a significant, has had a significant impact on our performance. So yeah, first half definitely under pressure of 2020.
You wouldn't be a believer in today's jobs numbers, not for a moment, at 23.2% unemployment in the second quarter. It's clearly a financial issue. I mean, it's not affecting the reality.
No, far from reality, for sure. Far from reality. Yeah, and I think the impact of COVID is still to be felt, a full impact of COVID and the impact on employment. I mean, it's a matter of time, yeah.
Vaughan, Marketing Director at SAB. I mean, there was a moment where I was wondering whether or not my tap water was going to start tasting of Castle Lager. If you're going to pour it all down the drains and feed it into the water system, I was living in hope that you would have to do that and have to destroy millions of litres of beer, but you didn't. Give me a perspective, please, as one of South Africa's most consumed products, just how you guys coped.
Of course, our product is built on the premise of sociability. So it was incredibly challenging, particularly for our on-premise retailers and traders, the restaurants, the hospitality industry, the sporting industry. So an immensely challenging time for our business. But beer always proves to be quite resilient. So as we've resumed trading, we've seen really good volumes. I think to Isana's point earlier, definitely some shifts in behavior. I think the increase of the at-home occasion is a critical one for us to consider in how that plays out. And also people making decisions based on value. And we are positioned in the value segment of the market. We have a broad portfolio, but essentially we're in the value segment, which seems to be quite robust.
I mean, are we going to see the consumption of beer change fundamentally? Or going on a trip in Europe and visiting Compania Pirabushka and many other of the old SAB Miller sites, and going to Pilsner Oquell and many others, and getting a very clear sense that in Eastern Europe there was a very clear in-home market, and that was, you know, beer sold in 2-litre PETs versus the on-premise consumption, where people would, you know, hold the bottles like you guys always do, with the labels facing out, showing everybody what it is that you're drinking, where you go and show off what your favorite brew is. Are we going to see a fundamental shift towards more of that kind of consumption?
I do think in the short term, due to the financial pressures and the fear of going out and socializing, that you would definitely see people looking for really good value, and there being less opportunities to badge, like you said, with those labels. But will we see fundamental shifts in behavior? I don't believe so. We've seen the benefit of being part of a global organization is that we can learn from other markets who are slightly ahead of us in their battle against the pandemic. And I don't believe there'll be fundamental shifts in categories. You would, however, see, you know, shifts to value. There's definitely a value-seeking behavior.
And talk to me then about restrictions on the sale of alcohol, of the transportation of alcohol. At one point we had Becky Cleller stopping motorists on the side of the road and ripping cases of beer out of car boots and stuff, and your trucks would have been restricted in terms of their ability to deliver. Now we can do purchases in bottle stores Monday to Friday, not allowed over the weekends, but on-premise consumption is allowed. Just give me a sense of how the market dynamics are affecting you right now.
Yes, I think that fundamentally there's going to be an increased responsibility between the private sector and the public sector. That is something that we really strive for and aim for to work with government. And I also find that there's a heightened need for true corporate sociability, not just with our corporate brand, but also with our consumer brands. So that they can play a meaningful an impactful role in society. And I think those were two of my bigger insights.
Mm. Misana, talk to me, please, about data, because you were making a very important point earlier about data and how data analytics is increasingly important in this world. And then I'll get to you, Anthony.
Thanks, Bruce. I'm sorry. I don't know. You know, we're relying on technology a lot these days, and then it fails us on the most crucial points. Yeah, so what I was trying to say... What I was trying to say is that we are starting to rely a lot more on the data because of the uncertainty we find ourselves in. Consumers have been restricted by laws, not in them to shop as they usually shop. They've been exposed to men. They've exposed to going to malls less, and definitely we see the basket sizes, but less to the mall. People are not going as much as they used to. And when we data year on year, it still looks like people got money. Remember that people didn't spend on travel as they used to. They didn't go out entertaining themselves. So it begs the question, does people just still have a little bit of cash in their pockets, and how long runs out?
Okay, Sana, still struggling with that connectivity, I'm afraid. When we look at the trends that we certainly see in the grocery market, and talking to the CEOs of ShopRite and of Pick and Pay and of Woolworths, the basket sizes increased, the visits decreased, and people were very selective in the way they went and bought their groceries. Did that play out also in the world of clothing retail?
Yeah, very much, Bruce. I think, you know, the reality is that e-commerce trade had actually left the station quite a long time before COVID hit us. I just think most people in South Africa haven't really seen it. The percentages were relatively small as a total contribution. But again, picking on Vaughan's point, when you're exposed to global trends, as we are through our offshore businesses in Australia and the UK, you could kind of see which way it was going in any event. When COVID hit, you'll remember the first month we couldn't even fulfill from an e-commerce perspective. It was amazing. People were still ordering and quite happy to wait for who knows how long, 4, 6, 8 weeks at the time. Nobody knew when you could actually start shipping. We went from, to kind of give a sense of scale in South Africa, at the beginning of our last financial year, e-commerce was 1% of our turnover. By the end of the year, it had grown 100%, so we got to 2%. We're currently running between 5 and 6%, and our Australian business pretty much doubled over the lockdown period as well. We saw actually both basket sizes increase, but also the number of visits increase dramatically, and I guess that's a reflection of people sitting at home, generally not going out as much as they used to, and spending more time, I guess, shopping online. So a fundamental shift was happening anyway. It's been accelerated, you know, based on our own internal timeframes, about these 3 years, and I think, you know, online shopping is a learned thing. Once you've realized you can use your credit card details, it's generally pretty safe. You generally get your goods within a day or two, and you can return them if you don't like what you get. It's very hard to unlearn that. So I think it's just moved us forward a number of years.
Now, when you say you're forward 3 years, Satya Nadella, the chief executive of Microsoft, was saying that they saw 2 years of digital innovation in 2 months. And I think that's been the global phenomenon, that global learning that we have seen play out as well. When it comes to e-commerce and as a percentage of sales, you go, it goes from 1% to 2%. You go, well, that's not very much. But that's 100% increase, Bongiwe. I mean, suddenly you've got to cope with this huge new demand. It may not seem very much from the outside, but paint a picture for me, please, as to what it takes to scale up that quickly from an internal perspective.
Oh, yeah, Bruce, very true. I mean, as a percent of sales, as you say, looks small, but we've actually now are running at close to 5-7% online sales and growing. Internally, obviously, TFG was very well placed to take advantage of this growth, because I think for the past 3-4 years, we've invested significantly on our online platforms, My TFG World, and apps and internet shopping for all our brands. So actually, in our logistics as well, over the years, we had perfected them. So it was a very welcome opportunity to have this sale increase so significantly. And when it's done, actually, we for a year or two, we ran online at a loss. And we just needed the volume, and this volume has obviously helped my bottom line, and certainly we're definitely breaking even for most brands, and even more profitable for some brands for sure. So it's been quite a welcome.
A seminal moment, as a moment that we don't go back from, that, as Anthony was just saying a moment ago, people get a taste. It's a bit like that first sip of craft lager. Once you've had the first sip, you've got to finish the rest. Online shopping, I think, is probably...
Oh, for sure. And obviously, remember, we see it with actually the brands that support the younger generations. Online sales have just shot up 200-300% for those brands, and I don't see it going back in any way. Actually, see it escalating, you know, continually, and as we continue investing definitely on online for sure.
Evan Walker, from your perspective, what has happened in the consumer goods sector across the retail sector in South Africa, and how have we held up worldwide over the last 6 to 8 months or so in this really weird time that we're all living through?
Bruce, it's been a number of different issues here. I mean, obviously we know anecdotally, and also know through the reported numbers, that the food retailers have done exceptionally well. I mean, everyone's rushing to Woolies Food and even ShopRite Food, etc., to procure what they would have been elsewhere eating out. And so there has been a change in consumption patterns. I think those will begin to normalize. I mean, in the Western Cape, we're seeing it normalizing quite fast. So I think countrywide, it will begin to normalize. But certainly we've seen, you know, a big move to additional home consumption, which has obviously propelled these food retailers into good levels of growth.
And the fundamental shifts that we're seeing, part of the discussion, but just this huge time, how big a change is this in South Africa's retail landscape?
Bruce, I think it's a very big change. I mean, it's a change for every single participant in these categories. I mean, obviously, for all the retailers, it's a big change. I mean, it's a big change of thinking from a consumer point of view, but certainly from a retail perspective. I mean, it requires a lot from the retailer, and the consumer's changing dramatically. I mean, globally. I mean, currently, there's two schools of thought. I mean, the one school of thought says that with interest rates so low, we're going to start seeing inflation climb, and this is going to be good for retailers generally across the globe. And the other school of thought says, well, we're going more and more online. People are going to be pricing way more aggressively, and this is going to be very deflationary and cause quite a big hiccup to consumer growth or to retailer gross margins going forward. So there's two big schools of thought out there. I mean, we sit with the latter one. I mean, we think this whole online process, people going more and more online, is going to drive prices down. We think it's going to be a deflationary for retailers generally over the next 3 to 5 years. And obviously what we've seen in COVID now, being reported from most of the wholesale industries around the world, funny enough, is an acceleration to where they thought they would be from an online perspective 2, 3, 4. In some cases, some companies say they thought they'd only be in this position 5 years from now. So it's a dramatic shift, Bruce.
I see, Bongiwe, you're nodding. Is this the sort of stuff that makes your blood run cold? Does this scare you, a deflationary environment in retail? It's really quite something quite scary to navigate.
Look, it is, Bruce, but again, we've seen the macros over the years, and TFG continually has produced deflationary sales year on year, and we continue on that drive. As we saw, the consumer was under pressure, price points, and had to come down, and through a lot of initiatives internally through our local manufacturing, a base, a sourcing locally, working with local suppliers to deliver a product in store on time, quick response, a large proportion of our merchandise is on a quick response basis. So that has allowed us to maintain gross margins. If you see our gross margins over the past 2-3 years, they've just remained quite stable in some brands, actually even growing because of all the initiatives we've done internally on the supply chain side, especially.
Expert advice and data-driven insights that unlock your business's potential. Absa Insights, brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. For more, visit absainsights.co.za.